This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today, Charlotte witnesses a transfer of leadership from one mayor and city council to the next. And so this hour, we spend time talking with our outgoing and our incoming mayors. Mayor-elect Vi Lyles joins us later in the program, but we begin with Jennifer Roberts, who ends her two-year term today. Welcome back to the program. Nice to see you.
Good to be here.
You can join us on Facebook. You can join us by email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can join us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks, or you can watch us on Facebook Live this morning. How do you feel today? Is this kind of a relief, or is it a painful moment in history for you?
Well, I think it's bittersweet, but I feel really good about the new council and mayor, and I feel really good about where we have brought our city in 2 years through some challenging times. We are incredibly resilient. We have an amazing staff. We are known nationally for being a leader in so many aspects of city government. So, you know, it's bittersweet. I would have liked to have some more time to finish some initiatives, but I feel pretty positive for our city.
When you look back on your 2 years, they were pretty turbulent, and some of those, I suppose you could say, were not of your making, and others perhaps were. How many of those moments were because of something you wish you hadn't done now?
You know, Charlotte became the central player in a national discussion on equality. And it wasn't something that we did not anticipate being, you know, having the overreach of our state government and preempting us on our ability to protect our own citizens, to talk about non-discrimination. We did not foresee that. The state did not foresee that backlash. But we became central to that national discussion. And when you look at what happened in the elections this past month in states across the country with transgender individuals being elected to serve and represent, it's amazing that Charlotte was at that place at that time. And I feel very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. The other big controversy was, of course, not of your making at all. It was the shooting by police of Keith Lamont Scott and the ensuing disturbances that rose out of that. And the I guess we all discovered a lot about our community that we perhaps were ignoring or didn't know. You were criticized heavily, however, for how you handled that and with some of the things you said about police, about being more transparent, and people felt that you threw the police chief under the bus and spent too much time talking to national media versus local media or communicating with citizens directly. When you look back on that, how do you assess your performance then?
Well, all of those things you just mentioned are incorrect and were put out by my opponents. And when you stand up for things, you make some enemies. So I was on the streets every night, and I never mentioned the police chief. I said our city, and I put myself in there. We need to be more transparent. And you know what? After this past year, what is the thing our chief said he's most proud of? More transparency in the department, but also more transparency in our city. One of the biggest challenges you have is getting information to the public in an era where information is everywhere, but everybody has different ways of getting it. Mm-hmm. And so we have done so many, you know, transparency workshops. We've had use of force demonstrations for the media. We've put it on the internet. We have had community meetings and community outreach. We've had meet and eat. We've had on the table. We've had so many conversations with our community. We are much more transparent, and we get information out faster.
You told Taylor Batten with The Observer that the city was not prepared for the protest. What did you mean by that? That we were not prepared for what, for that specific protest or for protests in general?
We had never seen a protest like that. And in the era of social media, it was unfolding differently than any protest in the past. And this is true nationwide. So again, we were at that critical point where there had been a number of incidents in other parts of the country that culminated in Charlotte. But that was very fluid because of social media. The police had not had to respond to something like that before. But we learned. And this constructive conversation unit that grew out of learning how to engage with citizens and how to confront aggression and de-escalate it, that has all been improved tremendously. So, and we also weren't prepared for communicating. There was confusion over what did the curfew mean. There was confusion, lack of updates to some council members at critical times. You know, I was uptown every day for like 20 hours, but a lot of the council members weren't, and we have again improved on that communication and with the public. So we weren't prepared for a demonstration of that size and of that fluidity, but we are in much better shape now. We are incredibly resilient, and we are working with those kinds of crises in a much better way.
I'm trying to remember the timeline of what happened before you took office 2 years ago with regard to what ultimately ended up being HB2. The city had voted down an ordinance, an LGBT ordinance, but then when you came to office, they voted it in, which led to the legislature passing HB2. Did you know before taking office that that was one of the things that you wanted to do, to revisit that issue?
We had a year of campaigning where most groups asked us expressly, mm-hmm. are you going to support that? And the council as well. And there was a turnover of a few folks on the council, and that vote did change. But you're right, that vote came up before I was ever mayor. I was carrying through, again, I think a great progressive stance the city made to support acceptance, inclusion, and equality for all people, that was following 200 other cities in America, including many of our competing cities like Atlanta, Columbia, South Carolina, et cetera, who had already done non-discrimination ordinances like that. So I was, during that year, we all promised to bring that vote up again.
Did you or council think that this would result in the legislature slapping you down with HB2?
Nobody foresaw the extent they would slap us down.
And Charlotte got punished for this. I mean, not just by the legislature, but by companies and organizations that canceled events in Charlotte, even because of what North Carolina was doing by passing HB2. As mayor, did you have conversations with the ACC and the NCAA and say, look, we tried to do what you want us to do right now, and we can't? And if you had those conversations, what was their response?
I worked very hard during that entire time to market our city, to say Charlotte did the right thing. Charlotte is a city that includes everyone, that's focused on equality. We're a welcoming, hospitable city. People know that. And the National League of Cities just brought 4,000 elected officials from all over the country here because they stand with our city and what we did. In fact, they were asked, would you have come even if HB2 had not been partially repealed? And they said, yes. We stand with cities who stand up for what's right, who stand up for supporting their entire population, not discriminating, including everyone, because that's what a public entity does. That's what is going to make us economically competitive, and it's the right thing to do morally.
You told the Observer, Steve Harrison, that some have called you the Harvey Milk of the East Coast. For those who don't know, Harvey Milk was the first openly elected official in the state of California, elected to the San Francisco Board of Advisors. You think that's a fair comparison?
Well, I'm certainly a very strong straight ally, and Harvey Milk is legendary, so I would not put myself in that category. But I am. I'm glad to have been part of that conversation on equality. Our country is moving forward in that way, and sometimes it's a challenge, and it's rough along the way, but you have to stand against bullies sometimes, and you have to stand up for everybody.
Hindsight is 20/20. Had you known the legislature would pass HB2 and we'd be involved in this very long back and forth and losing business, not only here but around North Carolina and building this national reputation among people who only peripherally follow the news as being a state that's unwelcoming as the result of what you tried to be as welcoming, would you have done it? Would you have encouraged council to vote in favor of the ordinance that led to HB2?
People still need to remember that it was the state that passed the overreaching law that prohibited local governments from protecting their own citizens from discrimination. It was the state that erred. It was the state that overreached, not what Charlotte did. Charlotte was not being radical. Charlotte was following what other cities had done to be competitive in the 21st century and to do what is right to protect our citizens. Mm-hmm. So it was the state that did something wrong.
Is this a case of a leader doing what they think is right and essentially damn the torpedoes full speed ahead? Is that what this is for you?
Again, no one foresaw the extent of that reaction from the state. It surprised everyone. And I'm hoping that they're thinking that they probably went too far.
Would you do it again?
You know, I don't get involved in those conversations because all the what ifs, you know, you're in a certain place in a certain time, things come together and no one can foresee, you know, if you've done something differently, what might have happened.
So we spent some time looking at some of the painful moments. When we come back, we're going to take some time and look at some of the accomplishments that you feel very proud of in your two-year tenure as mayor. Jennifer Roberts, our guest in this first part of the program. Later on, we'll meet the incoming mayor of Vi-Lyles. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mayor Jennifer Roberts is our guest for the next few minutes here before we meet Vi-Lyles. Aside from the controversies that we've just spent 15 minutes talking about, assess your performance as mayor. What letter grade would you give yourself?
I look at the results that we've gotten in our city. I look at the fact that the first half of this year, we've had the best job growth we've had in 5 years. Over 17,000 jobs created while I was mayor. One of our biggest jobs announcement that we've ever had in Charlotte with Allstate, 2,400 jobs. We look at having approved about 3,000 affordable housing units, really accelerating our housing there. We look at the fact that we're the number one millennial magnet in the country. We're a great place to start a small business. We get on the top five of so many different lists for economic development, for opportunity, for progress. We have challenges, but our national reputation is very strong. And when I look back at the last 2 years, we showed incredible resilience in overcoming the two challenges we just talked about,
right,
and continuing to bring companies here, continuing to maintain that reputation of being welcoming and hospitable, and growing our tourism industry along with many other industries, including financial technology, which I focused on.
One of the things that you like to talk about, I know, is Charlotte Next, which is an after-school program that you helped create or nurtured, or I'm not sure what the right word is there. Charlotte Next is an after-school program that didn't exist.
Correct.
Do you think a lot of people know about that?
Well, you try very hard to get your positive news out, but something about you guys, you just always go for the conflict.
Thank you very much.
So we've done a lot for our youth. We have grown the Mayor's Youth Employment Program, which is getting our young people into real jobs that lead to careers. We started Charlotte Next, and that was an initiative that I helped get going after convening about 400 educators parents and young people to talk about that after-school time. Mm-hmm. The time between 3 and 6 when our chief will say that kids have the most danger of getting into trouble.
Right.
But we know if they're doing something positive and structured, they also have the best supplement to what they're doing in the classroom that keeps them in school, keeps their grades up. And so Charlotte Next is going to serve up to 1,000 middle schoolers this year with after-school programs.
We spoke, you probably don't remember this, but we spoke shortly after you took office 2 years ago, and one of the things you talked about was you pledged to bring equal pay to female workers working for the city. Were you able to do that?
We have improved. What we did is we studied the difference, and actually the city is doing much better than the average in the country. Women are paid 90 cents on the dollar, and we added paid family leave, which is going to make a huge difference because folks won't have to take a pay cut when they have a baby. And that's, by the way, not just for mothers, it's also for fathers. We also raised the minimum wage for any city employee to $15 an hour. So we are working on valuing every employee, mm-hmm, and valuing them equally, working to close that gender gap and to make sure that we are modeling that for other employers.
This year's election, many people have said, is an election about change because we have so many new members of city council coming in tonight. We have a new mayor coming in tonight. How much of this do you think was due to the tumult of the past 2 years? Or how much of it is due to what is happening right now politically in Washington?
You know, there are elements of a lot of different things that go into elections, and, you know, everything from the national mood to turnout to, as you say, a sense of a need for change. I haven't, like, done the calculus on how all those different things weighed in, because I keep looking forward. And
but you have said this was not about change. This is not a change election in your mind. You told the Charlotte Business Journal that you see Vi Lyle's election and the election of the 9-2 Democratic majority on council as a continuation of your values and your work. You still believe that?
Absolutely.
Talk about
continuation
that.
Is further progress. And so if you look at the willingness of the young people to shake things up, to challenge some things, to bring progress, maybe even accelerate some progress, that's what I've been working toward the past 2 years in pushing for things like transparency, more community engagement, more openness, opening the mayor's office to a lot of different groups who haven't felt included before, not just the LGBT community, but the international community. You know, we've had a national conversation that's been very anti-immigrant. And I have had so much work done with the Latino community. I speak Spanish. I've been in that community a lot. But also with the Asian American community, with the African American community, so many groups that haven't felt included before. So we have been leading the way toward a progressive inclusion that makes the real public and public service stand out.
The average person may not see how many hours you and your predecessors put into this, and I'm sure Vi Lyle's will be doing it too beginning tonight, but how many hours that you put in. You kind of approached this like a 24-7 job. Pat McCrory did as well for 14 years, approached it like a 24-7 job. Has the time come for the Charlotte mayor to be a full-time job for somebody?
Well, it is a full-time job. And
well, yes, but I mean officially a full-time job, paid full-time,
well,
et cetera.
Remember, we're in a state where the state legislature has the authority over cities. Mm-hmm. And if that's a conversation that Charlotte's going to have, it's going to happen in other cities as well. Mm-hmm. Charlotte, the state doesn't like it when Charlotte tries to be unique and different. We want to be like other cities. But that conversation may be something that needs to happen. What I would like to see more is the ability of cities to manage their own destiny, to have more autonomy, more ability to protect their citizens, to plan and develop and grow the way that they see best and not be preempted by the state.
Has the time come for the mayor to have a vote on council, a regular vote? Every vote, you vote.
Well, you'd have to change the council. That would make it an even number, and then you wouldn't be able to break a tie. Be 6-6. So that's again a conversation.
What I'm saying here is it time to give the mayor more than figurehead power? I will tell you this. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Vi Lyle's is right behind you right now, and she's saying no.
I think there are more urgent priorities in our community. If you look at, you know, housing and jobs and transportation, all those things that we're working on are bigger priorities.
You presided over the departure of Ron Carley as the city manager. Ron Carley was brought in, I believe, by Anthony Fox with a specific mandate to be the face of the city, and he was. He was out. He talked to the media a lot. He was on this program a lot, and then suddenly he was no longer here because I think the makeup of council changed, and they didn't want somebody else to be the face of the city. I could be wrong about that, but that's the impression that I was left with. Our new city, our newest city manager, Marcus Jones, does not make himself available to anybody, to the media, ever. He's never been on this program. He will not come on this program. Given our structure where the city manager actually wields more power than the mayor, shouldn't the city manager make himself available?
Well, that's a conversation you need to have with Marcus Jones. But I will say that he has been in the community a tremendous amount. We had those meet and eat meetings all over the city. He was at every one of those. He has been at community conversations. He's been connected to the business community. I have seen him in all kinds of meetings and convenings around the city. And that is what he has felt is a priority, mm-hmm. to connect with the community. And he has a great reputation in that community. I think he's done a great job. We just gave him a 6% raise.
Yeah.
And that was, again, almost unanimous.
So where do you go from here? I mean, once the mantle of leadership is temporarily at least surrendered. Where do you go? What do you do? Do you have any political aspirations? Are you just going to kick back for a couple of months before you figure out what's next or what?
A lot of people have been asking me to do a lot of things. I've been having conversations and meetings with different people, and I am taking all that into account. I have promised my family that I'm going to wait at least 2 months before I say yes, because they haven't seen a whole lot of me in the last many years, and they're a pretty nice family. They're doing great things, and I want.
Do you remember
their
names?
Yeah. They're a very talented family, and their support has been tremendous for me. So I'm going to take those 2 months before I say yes. I am speaking at some conferences in the spring, including South by Southwest, talking about some great things the city's doing. So I'll continue to advocate. And when I'm ready to say yes to one of those offers, I'll let you know.
Jennifer Roberts, thank you for your time this morning. Thank you for 2 years of work and all the years you put in on County Council and County Commission. I mean, City Council and County Commission before that. Thanks.
Thank you so much, and to all the folks in Charlotte, it's been an honor to serve. This is a fantastic city, and it really gets that name, the Queen City, by being just a leader in so many ways. But it is the fabric of our community that just has made me so proud to be able to serve.
Mayor Jennifer Roberts, thanks very much. Tonight, Vi Lyles will be sworn in as the next mayor of Charlotte, our sixth mayor in less than a decade. She's the first African-American woman to hold the post, and after years of experience on council, two as mayor pro tem, and extensive experience working as a city employee, she starts her tenure as mayor with a new council, a majority of whom they're not in diapers, but they're under 40. They're young. Vi Lyles, congratulations and welcome to the program. Good to see you this morning.
Good morning, Mike. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
I think this is my first time being with you on the show for this kind of interview, so thanks.
Yeah. We tried to get you, I think, during the campaign, and we couldn't until we had the debate between you and your opponent.
Campaigning was a full-time job.
No kidding.
More than.
You've been in city government for a while. How long were you an employee?
Actually, I retired from the city. I came in as a budget analyst and left as assistant city manager. One of the reasons is that I had a bout of breast cancer. And, you know, Monday nights can be long and stressful, and I thought, let me take a break. And I retired and went to work the next day at the Lee Institute and joined Flynn Heath Holt. Part-time work,
right,
but really fulfilling work.
And you've been on council. You know the workload. You've watched your predecessor, Jennifer Roberts, try to cope with the job and with the unexpected things that come up, that crop up, and you've got to kind of make it up on the fly because you've never experienced that before in certain situations. Why did you want to put yourself in that position?
You know, maybe it's because I really have lived here and love this city, and I wanted us to maintain those values and traditions that would help us continue to grow. But we all know there's been disparity. We've known that since the 70s and the 80s. We've called it different names, but it was time to actually talk about changing and eliminating those disparities, and that's why I ran. Another reason is that I really know that the city council and the council manager form of government works best when a mayor works with people. Mm-hmm. And I've been one of those people that has been a collaborative leader all my life in this community as well as in government.
Is that why you decided to run against a fellow Democrat and an incumbent mayor, because you felt the criticism has been leveled by others, particularly by Republican Ed Driggs, that she was not able to establish good relationships with people on council, because she came from county commission and perhaps didn't have the same kind of feeling for the people on council. Is that why you decided to run?
I think that there were several times that I thought the mayor should work more with the council, and that was one of the reasons. But I also felt like it was just a time for change in leadership. It was time to begin to work on different issues that I had the understanding, knowledge, and expertise in.
You won, it wasn't by a landslide, but by what was predicted, it certainly was a landslide, because you won by a wide margin over your opponent.
I think I had almost 60% of the vote.
Yes. That's kind of a landslide. So why do you think the voters chose you?
I think for several reasons. One, I have experience in government, so I know what makes government work, so they knew that the transition would be quick. The second reason is that I could walk in every part of this community and people know me and they know who I am, and I've been very clear that being authentic as a leader is very important, and the ability to walk in and say, this is what we can do, what do you think we ought to be doing, and also the ability to say, we can't do that. You know, whether it's for legal reasons or relationship reasons or the future. And I think people believe what I said.
What do you think they want you to do? I only have about 20 seconds in this segment, but what do you think they want you to do?
They want jobs, affordable housing, and great, safe neighborhoods.
And we'll come back and talk about those three things with Vi Lyles, our mayor-elect who takes office tonight. What time?
7 p.m. tonight.
The clock is ticking.
It is.
It's never too late to back out.
No, I don't think I'm doing that. I'm really proud to be able to serve.
Vi Lyles is our guest. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to our incoming mayor who takes office tonight at 7 o'clock, Vi Lyles, who won handily in the last November election. Mayor Roberts says that your election and that of the Young City Council, we just talked about this a few minutes ago, is a continuation of her work and the direction she helped take the city in, and not a mandate for change. How do you see it?
I think it's a mandate for focus. I think that this community had been on the national stage in so many ways that they were saying, what's happening at home? And so while I believe in the values that we've talked about over the past 2 years and Mayor Roberts has talked about, I think it's time to focus on our people. So what I look at is, do people have jobs? Do they have the ability to work here and live here? You know, when we talk about wages and growth, that disparity between coming in and being in the financial or the tech sector and those folks that haven't had the training to do those jobs, what's happening? So what I think people said is, let's focus on what's going on at home.
You use the word mandate. I think I did, too. Do you consider your margin of victory a mandate, that people want you now to take the role and do what you said you would do?
I think that people want people that are elected to do what they say they're going to do. It's not a mandate on the person. It's a mandate on the issues. And consistently, when you look at the entire council, everyone that was elected, right, they talked about the commitment to the community. Now, we may have different strategies for how to do that, but the overall big buckets are the same.
But does your mandate of does your margin of victory make give you the feeling that you can pretty much guide the process the way you see fit, because so many people voted for you?
I'm going to guide process, but substantive change comes from the community. Think about this. Those 2 years spent on the Economic Opportunity Task Force, that's probably the number one community plan that we've had that people have embraced community-wide. Getting it out in all parts of the community and having people understand what's going on in every neighborhood, whether or not you live in a place where people aren't being a part of our economics, and whether you are, I think everybody understands that. So it is a mandate from the community around economic opportunity, affordable housing. Those are things that people believe in.
We spoke last week with three of the new incoming young members of council who all said, I think to a person, that they want to work on upward economic mobility. That seemed to be at the top of their list. And it's an area in which Charlotte has proven to be woefully weak. On the morning after your election, you said that you intended an early policy emphasis on affordable housing.
Yes.
Are you at odds with the council now?
That is absolutely not at odds, because think about every day. If you don't have housing security, how can you get a job? If you don't have the ability to know where you have an address to send mail or to receive mail, to have a place where you have digital access to apply for a job, you know, you have to have that. I think the difference that I see is that we have to actually decide how to do all of these things. And affordable housing is something that we have the money to do. We have the policies to put in place. Economic opportunity and how we develop jobs takes a little bit more work. We don't have those policies in place. So I'm looking forward to the council actually tackling how do we create jobs when we are the place that people come? How are we going to do industry? How do we get more jobs in Charlotte?
Affordable housing is what you said you wanted to put your emphasis on, at least at the top. There are restrictions on exactly, in North Carolina, on exactly what city governments can do to expand the stock of affordable housing or even to preserve the stock of affordable housing. And the city's had a tough row to hoe there. They've tried some incentives which have not exactly been glommed onto by developers. How do you plan to advance that cause?
I think there are a few things that I would suggest. One, in this community, you think about the 1960s and 70s apartment complexes and how they are at that point where they are aging out. We have the opportunity to go in and work with people that are community-minded investors. We have the opportunity to go work with our faith communities to say, why don't we take some of those places and acquire the renovation of them, require it, along with funding it. So I think that's one. The other thing that you think about is the faith community has worked in small ways quietly, but what I've seen them do is step up now with not just we want to help with homelessness, but we want to help with affordable housing. I'm going to be reaching out to the faith community and the Economic Opportunity Leading Task Force. They, again, recognize you have to have stability of housing to be able to go to work every day.
One of the critical issues that came out in the last year or two was the lack of economic upward mobility for people in Charlotte. If you're born poor in Charlotte and you live here your entire life, the chances are you're going to die poor. How do you help people climb the economic ladder as a mayor?
Well, as the mayor and as someone that works in the city in this environment, the very first thing we have to do is tell people we want them to create opportunities. I'm particularly proud of our two healthcare systems because they have been active. Novant and Carolina's Healthcare, they have people working there, the people that are working in our hospital rooms, cleaning them, feeding us in the cafeterias, and they have agreed to move to a $15 minimum wage over time, of course, but they've understood this is an economic opportunity for them to keep our people that live here in a place that they can afford to work here. Think about Google. You know, they're running private bus systems in San Francisco right now because the people that actually support all of that brain trust, there are people that have to come to work every day in that building to make it possible for them to be successful. We don't need a secondary private transportation system. We need to create the options for people in our own community to take public transit to jobs in our healthcare systems, in our financial institutions. So what we're going to do is build transportation options, and we're going to ask our businesses, the financial institutions, Bank of America, Wells, our healthcare institutions, our largest employers have stepped up to do that.
So they're not going to start their own transportation system, but you're asking them for money.
No, I'm asking them to create jobs that have a livable wage for people that work in the city, but also live in the city, and to recognize that the people that start out at whatever level, they need to be making enough money to be able to have health care and live in Charlotte.
What's their incentive for doing that?
A talented workforce, a community that they're proud of. The goal to say that we are not going to be 50th in economic mobility. There is a lot to be said about branding our city. We've always been known as the New South City. We've always been known as public-private economic development, successful city that way. We can be successful in changing the dynamics.
We have the dubious distinction of having a rising murder count in Charlotte. What, if anything, can you do about that? We have an understaffed police department, according to the chief, so what can you do about that?
Well, there are a couple of things. We need to go ahead and address the staffing in the police department, but I think that dynamic isn't really related. Crime and murders are very complex issues, and when the chief comes to the city council and reports about that, he talks about the idea of what's going on that makes a difference. Think about how many of those murders are directly related to domestic family, domestic partner violence. We've got to do a little bit more. You know, we closed off a lot of our community health care systems. In fact, you did a program a couple of weeks ago on providing mental, well, like last week, I believe, on how do we provide mental health services in this community. It's not working. We've got to do more. Now, that's not something that the city does, but I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to work well with Ellis Scarborough, the county commission, and Dina Diario. I think there's some opportunities there for us to make public safety better.
You just mentioned Ellis Scarborough, who is an African-American woman. You're an African-American woman. The head of the school board, Mary McCray, is an African-American woman. We have an African-American man who is the chief of police. A lot has been made of the fact that you are the first African-American female mayor. We've had African-American mayors in our past. But now we have all these African-Americans at the top of the ladder here on a lot of different leadership positions. What do you see as the significance of that?
I think this has really been an interesting dynamic for me. What I see is if that's what really gets us out on the national stage, then let's get out on that stage, but then let's quickly pivot to what our community is. So I've been sending out letters when people have said, come and appear on a national event. I do that, and then I say, let me tell you about our city. Let me tell you about what we want, and can I help you learn more about our city? Can I help you understand what we're trying to do and come back and talk about that with me?
I believe you voted for the LGBT ordinance that resulted in the backlash from the legislature and their passage.
As well, yes.
So had you been the mayor, would you have pushed for that ordinance to be passed? Do you think you would have found yourself in the same pickle that Mayor Roberts found herself in as a result of that?
I think that we probably would have been in the same pickle because we had no idea about what the state was going to actually do. We had models in other states where these ordinances had come, and there was reaction. But then there was an idea of let's talk to our business community, let's talk to the LGBT community, and let's bring everyone together to see how we deal with it. We had no idea. If you remember, HB2 also included things like you can't do minimum wage. It included some other aspects that didn't have anything to do with passing a non-discrimination ordinance. So I think we would have probably been in that same situation. The question to me now is how do we get out of that? Because when you look at across the country and we talk about workforce development, think about Amazon and what that means. So we're going to have to figure out how do we, from the 60s when we guaranteed a non-discrimination ordinance for African Americans, as we continue to address these issues, how do we address this for our community of LGBT people? Because it is not going to go away. We're going to have to work on it. I'm glad to see that Governor Cooper stepped up and helped us in some respects. But I've said this often, we need to go at this with our mayors across the city, across the state, that feel like this is a value to our community. I know it's a value in our community in Charlotte.
The other big problem that Mayor Roberts faced was the aftermath of the Keith Lamont Scott shooting and the protests. And we talked about this when she was here. I think you were in the studio already. Mm-hmm. We talked about it, the fact that this was the way this unfolded, these protests unfolded, was unprecedented for Charlotte because of the advent of social media. How do you think you would have handled those protests? What would you have done differently?
I don't look at it as what I would do differently because I believe when we were in a crisis, and as you said, it was unprecedented in Charlotte, what I believe made a difference is that we did not know the national trends. Mm-hmm. We did not know and have an idea, but now we do. So we have to be responsible enough to understand we need a crisis management plan, but we also have to understand the impact of social media in this world, and that has been a game changer.
Mayor Roberts, not on this conversation we just had, but she bemoaned the fact at one point to another interviewer that the mayor didn't have a vote, and you were shaking your head, it's not time for a full-time mayor. Is it time for the mayor to have a vote?
No, I think the mayor's job is to actually be a leader in both substance and vision and process. So, no, it's not about the mayor having a vote. It is about the mayor working with the council and the community to be successful in the things that we bring forward. Those votes ought to be successful because we've laid the groundwork to get it done. So my work is about, how do we plan to bring something forward where we have people in the audience saying, I want this? That's the plan.
Mayor-elect Vi Lyles, soon to be the mayor at 7 o'clock tonight. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Mike.
And thank you very much for being with us.
I look forward to coming back.
Please come back as often as you like.
Well, maybe as often as I'm invited. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.